Movie BS with Bear and Snyder. Can you think of anything finer than wasting some online time with these two? Can you?
It's the kind of movie where the sword budget was higher than the pants budget.
You know what he is? He's Ray Romano, but dirtier.
It's a cat and mouse game, okay? The mouse's parents have been killed. The mouse has been raped. And the mouse's home has been burned to the ground. Now, guess who did all this?
The cat?
Yes.
Say that, friends. It's time for Movie BS. With Bear and Snyder.
Pitch me.
Pitch me.
Gender qual.
Oh, the pants are too wet and they're too shiny.
Tom Cruise is what I would like to say, Crazy Cruise.
I'm going to change the story to Robert Pattinson killed a clown.
Sir, as you know, my unit is the very best.
Without these two, you won't have a clue which movies to see. So tune in every week. That's right! I said tune in weekly. Hey, welcome to Movie BS with Bear and Snyder, the world's only podcast. I'm your host, Eric D. Snyder, here with my co-host, Jeff Bear.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jeff Baer. That was my co-host, Eric D. Snyder. Welcome to the show.
Welcome, one and all. Sorry we took another week off.
We'll never do it again. Now.
We'll never take a week off again until the next time that we do.
Right. But then after that?
But until then, never.
Never.
And after that, never.
No. We're done.
It's the summer anyway.
Now, wait. When we say we're done, that means we're done with the show.
No, it means we're done skipping shows. It means we're done doing things other than the show.
All right. I'm going to show up to the next meeting because I had a misunderstanding of that.
Yeah, we did some votes without you.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Eric.
Yeah, Jeff.
If I understand anything.
Which the jury is still out on.
I think I will probably live in Portland, Oregon. October 15th. I'm throwing it out there.
Is that the date? October 15th?
I think we might have a place. I don't know how this world works. It's my first time, and it's very intimidating.
This is your first time. But you guys are moving back to Portland from San Diego. To catch up our listeners who may have missed the announcement before, you guys moved to San Diego last July.
Assumed we'd be there forever or a long time.
Years. You wanted to come back to Portland eventually.
But we didn't know if we'd have the chance
had
to,
no time
or,
frame,
or if we'd fall in love with San Diego in the meantime.
Sure. Well, that doesn't
matter. We didn't know.
San Diego. It's like vanilla ice cream. Like, it's fine, but it's not.
What it's like? No. You're right, because if you would have said vanilla bean, I would have been like, no, it's like vanilla.
Yeah. But then an opportunity arose for you guys to come back soon.
Thank you, wife.
Yeah, because your wife has a real job.
Yes. Oh, gosh. It feels more fictitious than what I do, but society has deemed it very real and very purposeful, whereas mine still, when you describe it, sounds even worse.
That's true, because what we do deals with tangible things like movies and actors.
That's
and
right.
And what your wife does is like medicine, so like germs.
She'll look inside human beings. I don't even know what you'd like do with
that. Imaginary tiny things that she can see or whatever.
Yeah. She will sometimes see a human being and then out of nowhere pull another human being out of that other human being.
Whoa.
Which doesn't sound like something that can be done.
That doesn't make any sense. That's like magic. Yeah. That's magic right there.
That's right. But
your wife is a witch.
Yes. Wait. What did you say?
And so now you guys are moving back and you're buying a house. You're buying a house in Portland. And it's the first time that you've bought a house as opposed to just squatting in an abandoned one. Right.
That is 100% correct.
Nice.
And it's very, very exciting. But good God, I can't recall the last time that I had so little control over something so important as far as just feeling like, well, did I do it right?
Yeah.
Are we accepted? Did we win? So all of that, if we did win the prize of that house, then we will be living in it. By the middle of October.
Nice. And you told me the address, and it's, what did I say, 3.4 miles from my place?
You did say that.
So a little bit closer than where you lived before.
Almost half as close, right?
It was about half, I think. So it wasn't half. Yeah, you're 3.4 miles away now. You used to be 6.2.
Yeah, you used to say my house was too far away for you to run to, but now how do you feel?
Oh, now I can just throw on the old track shoes and jog over there. Be there in a jiff.
A jiff takes an hour and a half? That's my calculations.
That's
on your
about a jiff, yeah.
Three and a half miles.
Three and a half miles. Anyway, the point is you guys are moving back, and that's exciting.
Oh, it's exciting. Oh, man. So excited. So excited. I didn't want to, when we were house shopping this last weekend, I kind of wanted to figure out how I could just stay.
Oh, were you guys in town last weekend?
Wait, that was you, wasn't it?
Just kidding.
So anyway, yeah, I worship Portland, and I only like San Diego, so I can't wait.
Good. Let's review some movies. Let's get that out of the way.
Okay.
A few wide releases this weekend, only one of which we've seen, and well, that's American Ultra.
Not totally our fault. Right?
No, not at all. No.
We had to make a choice between American Ultra and
Hitman Agent 47.
Oh, that's right. I was about to say Transport Refueled, but they're off.
That's another movie.
That's another one that maybe we won't have a chance to see. And then nobody was allowed to see Sinister 2, right?
Yeah, no. I think there were junket screenings in L.A., but
not
in the other places. Yeah, and the other two screenings were at the same time, so we had to choose. So I think we both went with the one that we thought had a better chance of being good.
I think that is correct.
Yeah. And so American Ultra is the movie we chose, starring Jesse Eisenberg, Kristen Stewart.
And you want to go on? Because we got some more people.
It's
worth
a
mentioning.
Fine cast. Connie Britton, Tammy Taylor from Friday Night Lights.
Topher Grace.
Good old Topher Grace.
He was in it.
I've always liked him. I've always had a thing for Topher Grace. I wish that
I've always wanted to like him. The shine has come off.
Sure.
Walton Goggins.
Yeah.
John Leguizamo. And then
Bill
we got
Pullman,
your
for a minute.
Bill Pullman, Tony Hale. Come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
All kinds of great folks.
And the
premise here, it's a dumpy town in West Virginia, and you got a young stoner couple, or a young couple that smokes weed sometimes. We don't get that it's like the center of their life, but it's
really close to the center. It's definitely a daily activity, and you would kind of assume waking and baking would be going on here from time to time.
And they don't really
hang on. Isn't he rolling at work?
Yeah, that's true. Well, him more than her, then though.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Which means that maybe his stonerness ought to have played a bigger part in his personality, which is one of my criticisms of the movie.
Would you settle down?
Anyway. So he's Mike and Phoebe, and he has panic attacks whenever they try to go on vacation or whatever. And then it turns out that maybe he was in the CIA or something. Or was part of a CIA situation. So Connie Britton is a CIA person. She gets a call back at CIA telling her that something's going down.
Yeah.
And it involves this Mike fellow. And I'm being vague because we don't – at this point in the movie, we don't know what's going on. Mike doesn't know what's going on. But he turns out to have been sort of a Bourne Identity situation where he had training that he has now forgotten.
But we do sort of know what is going on only because the movie, for some reason, starts by showing us some end footage, and then it rewinds. Then it rewinds the entire movie.
Mm-hmm. It does.
So you'll catch images of what's going on. So it does that, and I don't know why it does that. And I think I'll actually try to find out from Max Landis, the writer, the young writer who is quite talented.
Mm-hmm.
I'll see if I can get to the bottom of that on Twitter.
Good luck with that, because if there's one thing I know about Max Landis on Twitter, it's that he is not thin-skinned, not defensive, not a douchebag, and not horrible. So I'm sure
nice.
You will have a great experience asking him about one of your complaints about his movie.
Oh, I didn't say I was going to complain to him. I was going to be curious.
Oh, all right. Good luck.
Thanks.
So, yes, Mike apparently has CIA training.
Mm-hmm.
His hands are deadly weapons, but he doesn't
remember
that.
And he's as surprised about this as his girlfriend is, and then it's a matter of things escalate quickly because of Topher Grace's Adrian Yates trying to close up the situation, get all these loopholes out of here.
Another faction in the CIA trying to shut down
and
get rid of these assets. And so,
and then there's code names involved, but it's mainly tough guys versus wise man.
It's two different programs.
That's right.
The movie never does tell us what these programs were beyond vague of we were going to recruit civilians to be CIA people somehow.
And it's kind of convenient because of that whole Bourne thing. And even some of Jesse Eisenberg's Mike's conversations are very much related to that without being specific to it. Like, you know, his idea of like maybe I'm a robot, that sort of thing plays into it very well. This is the thing that I really thought. Man, Jesse Eisenberg is fascinating to watch here. I wish the movie would almost slow down a little bit and let him try to just keep talking about stuff. Because I felt like some of the action was just kind of your normal run-of-the-mill action. Some of it was very creative, but others of it was just like, all right, it's just an action movie.
It's a fairly drab, really violent CIA kind of shoot 'em up.
And not only that, the violence, it was weird because at first I thought, oh, this is going to be a lot of interesting, weird violence that we're going to see based on how he first kills.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem to really go that way, or at least you don't feel like you're totally seeing it. Like, you know that you're there in the room when it's happening, but it's not filmed in a way that's really shedding any kind of new light into how action movies should look. It's not like what was the one with Colin Firth just a little bit of the Kingsman.
Kingsman, yeah.
Like, there was moments there where you're just like, oh, this is creative. Somebody that's – yes, somebody that's really on top of their game trying to push action in a new direction. This one kind of settled on the idea of – come on, we're being cool. We got a sweet cast, and Jesse Eisenberg's doing this thing. And sometimes it just somehow made it feel terribly ordinary, even though a lot of the movie I found a lot of fun.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think some of it is fun, but so mostly I feel disappointed in the lost opportunities. Mike is this pothead, apparently, but we don't know really anything about his personality. And like I said, the pothead aspect is not really played up. Particularly,
it almost feels like it's one of the like missing scenes of, you know, pot is needed because of this. You know what I mean? Like, he needs pot, otherwise he'll remember. Like,
we never get something like
that would have been helpful.
Even a hint of an explanation of why he doesn't remember his training, what they were training him for. It's all very generic and unsatisfying there.
Yes,
And his personality, there's just not much to it.
But at the same point, wasn't it like even little things where he's like, I'm still in handcuff, and he uses the singular.
Yeah, that was funny.
There's little tiny things that he does that I'm just like, yeah, keep entertaining me, Jesse.
And Topher Grace, the antagonist who wants to shut down Connie Britton's program, no idea what his motivation is. No idea what his motives are for wanting to shut that whole thing down.
That is weak, and... honestly, I didn't think on paper it feels like a laugher, mm-hmm. Walton Goggins' character, would be phenomenal.
This lunatic that's one of the guys sent after Jesse Eisenberg.
And having him in that role seems like it would just be like off the charts. Everybody would talking about him being the best thing. But that performance didn't work for me. That character didn't work for me like I kept wanting it to. John Leguizamo, on the other hand, I could use more of Rose. I thought Rose was a drug dealer. Yeah.
He was fun.
So it was weird how hit and miss it kept being for me.
Yeah. Written by Max Landis, directed by the guy who directed Project X, that terrible, terrible found footage party movie a few years ago. I give American Ultra a C+.
I liked it a little bit more. And I'm giving it a 7 out of 10, mainly because I think Eisenberg's really good here. So, yeah.
Yeah. I think it's okay with an underwritten role.
Yeah.
Man from U.N.C.L.E. is a movie that you saw last week when I was away.
That's right.
I was in jail last week.
Salt Lake City?
Mm-hmm, just sleeping it off.
Yeah.
Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Are you saying Salt Lake City is jail, or are you saying you were in jail?
I was... never mind.
Okay.
What's Man from U.N.C.L.E. about? Who's the uncle? Stands for something, right?
Wait a minute. Are you saying that you didn't? I can't remember. It's long-winded, and it's a show. It's a show from the 60s that we're supposed to think it's relevant that they're bringing this back.
Somebody,
this is
Somebody with OCD got a hold of a list of all the TV shows that had not had movies made out of them yet. Like, oh, we got to do Man from U.N.C.L.E.
I know that I could find out what U.N.C.L.E. means very quickly.
I bet I can find it out while you're talking.
I don't think we should. Here's the deal. It's a CIA agent named Napoleon Solo. Mm. That's from the TV show, I believe. And then the KGB operative, Ilyan Kravanka?
Sure. I'm sure that's exactly how it's pronounced.
I'm sure I'm nailing both of those. and they have to team up.
Sure. And they've got some mutual enemy that threatens both the U.S. and the Soviet Union, right?
They're early 60s. And then a little bit more background on the CIA agent. He used to be up to no good, and then they kind of forced him to be in the CIA because otherwise it would be a waste of skills. Mm. And that's Henry Cavill, otherwise known as Superman. And then Armie Hammer is, the Lone Ranger. Actually, I'm sorry. It's the Winklevoss twin that didn't play the Lone Ranger is this one. It's the other one, the good one.
Right? Really? What?
Right?
I don't know.
Right, there was two of the twins.
No, there's just the one
two
guy. Just one guy.
No, there's two Armie Hammers. There's one where he shows up and does good work that's fun and interesting, and then there's the other one that shows up and doesn't.
Ah, gotcha.
And this is the good one.
U.N.C.L.E. Stands for the United Network Command for Law and Enforcement. There you go.
Great snappy dialogue that is cool, that wants to be cool, and most of the time it is cool between the two of them. It's really good banter. The movie looks slick. It felt to me kind of like X-Men Days from Past. What is it? The one that was in the prequel?
The Days of Future Past or First Class?
First Class. It felt slick like that in a good way. Everybody was stylish and cared, and it worked. The women here are totally worthwhile. They are not toss away.
I hate worthless women.
I hate it in movies.
Yeah.
And Hugh Grant shows up a little bit. Huh. So you got a really good, snappy cast. You got great-looking action from Guy Ritchie. I'm one of the few people that thinks both Sherlock Holmes movies were good, the second one actually improving. Nobody else agrees with me on that. But
that's right.
I think he knows how to make really good-looking movies, and this one is peppy enough to keep you going. And I really liked it, and there's some double-crossing and blah, 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 and it didn't make much money. But it's something that you should definitely see because the majority of you are really going to like this movie. I'm confident in that. It's an 8 out of 10.
All right, then.
It could be BS approved if Eric ever sees it.
You never know. Tangerine, another movie I want to mention for a few minutes. This played at Sundance last year, and that's where you saw it, right?
Yes, that is where I saw it, I think.
Yes. And then I saw it last weekend here in a movie theater, and at Sundance, all that anyone talked about with this was that it was shot on an iPhone 5. That was the hook.
That's it. That was the hook to get you to watch the movie.
And that didn't interest me because I don't care what it was shot on. Like that made me think that was the only thing interesting about the movie, and so I didn't bother with it. And I'm annoyed at that because having seen it now, one, you wouldn't know it was shot on an iPhone. Like, you can tell it's shot digitally, but you wouldn't, like, there's nothing about the way it looks in particular that is unusual or whatever. But then I actually liked the movie. About a couple of, what?
No, yeah.
All right.
You're like the majority.
I know. I thought you were going to disagree with it, with how it looked.
I kept going back and forth on this because the thing you notice is there's no zooming.
Right.
And it's just that thing of like, I kept wondering, would I feel more movement and energy if this wasn't shot on an iPhone 5? Because I, unlike others, didn't feel a lot of movement and energy with this film.
Yeah,
so that was it.
But lots of movies don't use zooms though.
I know. But it was just that thing of like, all right, you don't have that opportunity. So like, how do I feel? What's going on? Why isn't this totally working for me? That's all.
It's about a couple of transsexual – well, strictly speaking, they're transsexual meth whores in Los Angeles.
It's what their business card says.
That's what it says. Cindy and Alexandra. And Cindy has just gotten out of the lockup. These would be ladies who were born male and who are now – various stages of transitioning to female. They present as female, and they work as sex workers, hookers. Yes. And Cindy just got out of jail, and her pimp slash boyfriend, played by James Ransone.
I say, in her opinion, probably boyfriend slash,
yes. Boyfriend yeah. slash pimp. Yes, that's yeah. right. Yeah. Cheated on her, and so she wants to track down the girl that he was with. And
you'd say she's motivated, correct?
She's motivated, yes.
she's got a lot of energy toward this.
Her best friend, Alexandra, is all like, I don't want your drama. I don't need this. It's Christmas Eve in West Hollywood. I don't need your crazy drama. Yeah. And then there is crazy drama. And I especially really like Alexandra, the friend. I think the actress, Mia Taylor, I don't know who she is, but I think that her delivery is really good, and her lack of patience for her friend's nonsense. She made me laugh several times.
Okay.
And then the main one, Cindy, I think was a little broad, and she's also kind of awful. Like, she's kind of terribly mean right. to the girl yeah. that her boyfriend cheated with. And anyway.
She's mean. Oh, come on. She's mean to everybody.
Well, that's true. She is mean to everybody.
Yeah. I think their performances were, you know, probably terribly authentic. I didn't find it interesting enough, because to me, it was completely and utterly a meandering. Let's go from point A to point B. Oops. Let's go to point A again. All right. Now let's go to C. But then I think we'll end up on, you know, A again anyway.
And there's a mission. They're trying to find first the girl and then the guy. So they know what they're doing, but yeah, it takes them around.
They know what they're doing, but yes, it's just exhaustive, occasionally funny conversations that I felt like that were occurring, as opposed to funny conversations that were occurring that I would like, who cares? Let's have this last longer.
I think clearly you should have watched this movie with me, because when I saw it, it was funny and it made me laugh.
Well, you know what? They probably changed everything from when I saw it.
Probably. No, I find the characters
music.
Interesting.
Wait, how did you feel about the music?
The music was fine, but kind of.
And you barely even remember the music.
I remember that there was music, and I remember thinking, "Okay, I wish this music were over, and they get back to the dialogue. There'd be music over montages of them walking or whatever." And I just it didn't do much for me.
Yeah, yeah.
But you liked the music.
I liked the music, but I believe it created false energy for the movie. Like it was one of those things where I was like, "Yeah, if I was at the club, like." Right now, where I am every Wednesday through Saturday, then this music would be good. But otherwise, I didn't feel like I needed it for the movie.
And in addition to being funny, it was also an interesting look into this subculture. And apparently,
you've been looking to get into any kind of pimping for as long as I can remember.
Yeah.
So
and apparently, fairly accurate. I you know, it's centered around that donut shop.
Yeah,
the donut shop in the movie, and they say in the movie it's at the corner of Santa Monica and Highland. That is the real donut shop at the corner of Santa Monica and Highland, and there's a lot of transsexual sex workers in the area. And it's right next to the Little Armenia neighborhood, because in the film there's an Armenian cab driver who's fond of a couple of the girls.
So now you have your starting point now. You have a launching pad for when you want to get into this stuff.
My base of operations.
That's right.
No, I got a kick out of it. It was light, breezy, funny, and occasionally kind of serious as it gets into the like a little bit of the drugs and the sex and kind of that whole lifestyle. Doesn't treat it super seriously, but it kind of hints at what that life must be like. And I enjoyed it. I give it a B+. So there.
I give it a 5 out of 10.
All right.
It's something that I allow our listeners to see. I do not forbid it.
You won't think less of them for seeing it.
Asking me to think less of people is really hard, Eric.
That's true. Because you already think so little.
they can only go up from there.
Yeah.
I'm not expecting much out of you.
Then a movie that I saw that you didn't is called Once I Was a Beehive, which is a bizarre movie.
Is Beehive spelled like we think it should be spelled?
Yeah, Beehive. It's what they call the new campers. Or beehives in this situation.
Campers.
It's about girls' camp. I need to preface this by saying that you should not listen to my opinion about this movie because I'm friends with a lot of the people in it.
Right.
So don't listen to me. I'm biased.
Yeah. Skip ahead or just plug your ears while Eric talks.
But Once I Was a Beehive comes from Utah, and it's playing in Utah theaters now, and it's going to kind of circulate as demand necessitates. And it's about girls' camp, which the Mormons do, and I think some other churches do too. They have like a summer camp, like a week-long camp for the teenagers or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And so it's the girls' camp, and it's from the point of view of a non-Mormon girl who sort of gets dragged along to this girl camp with her new step-cousin, as her mother is recently remarried. And the step-cousin is an anxious, fearful girl, and so that's why her new cousin's like, okay, I'll go with you to girls' camp and kind of help you out. And then it's this funny and sweet story about girl power, and you know, you got the, kind of this assortment of girls. One is a boy crazy girl, and one of them is always cracking jokes, and you know, your variety of girls and your camping shenanigans. And when I saw it, I went to Utah last week to see friends and family, and also clearly coincided with the premiere of this movie. And I was nervous because if it wasn't any good, that would make it awkward after the movie when I was hanging out with the people who had made it.
You have had these situations before.
Yes.
And it does seem that you are somebody that can accurately absorb friends' material and still keep your head on straight and judge it properly. And
I try,
and,
yeah.
And almost want to the point where you're like, maybe I shouldn't hang out with you after this.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like,
a few times,
you would,
yeah.
You would look to see if you could fake diarrhea maybe, as opposed to hang out at that
party. Let's talk later. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was relieved when this turned out to be genuinely funny. And it actually even made me cry a couple of times. It's very sweet with some of the girls. Hmm. Like the one girl who's anxious and fearful, and then her friend whose father had died. And there's some nice emotions in there. The girls are all. I mean, a few of the girls kind of run together, kind of aren't distinct characters, but the main ones, good performances and really fun. It's not super Mormon-y. It's religious. There's some religious angles, but not really Mormon specifically. But it is about how faith can be a comfort to people and all that.
Okay.
And fun, and like I said, girl power and sisterhood, and there's a bear. I mean, a grizzly bear.
How old are the kids, do you think?
The kids are all range from like 13 to 17.
Okay. So definitive change. Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
And I really got a kick out of it. And I think especially Mormons will get more out of it because there are a few lines that will mean more. But anyone, I think, with any kind of religious background or tolerance would, I think, find it amusing and sweet. Good family film. And like I said, it's in Utah now. And if you go to their website, onceiwasabeehive.com, you can demand that it come to your city.
Ooh,
if enough people
serious.
Demand it. Yeah, you have to demand it. Like you pound your fist on the table and demand it.
So you don't have to even click anything.
No, you just pound your fists on the
nice.
Table.
Yeah. Do you think do you know by chance future VOD or future film festivals? Do you know what they're thinking?
Not film festivals, I don't think, because they've done an actual release in Utah, and I don't know beyond that. Eventually, I think they're hoping to get some demand to play it around the country, and then after that, go to VOD and Netflix and all that.
Nice.
But it is worth seeking out. I think. I think you probably know. You listeners, you know if you're the target audience. And, yeah, it's good stuff.
Cool.
I'm proud of my friends.
That's the best.
That is the best. Again, because it would have been very, very awkward. Listen up, somebody. Marlon. What's your Marlon Brando thing called?
Listen to me, Eric. The movie is called Listen to Marlon.
Listen to me,
Marlon. Or no, Listen to me, Marlon. Listen to me, Eric.
Listen to me, Marlon.
Listen to me, Marlon. I don't know who you think you... Oh, you're Marlon Brando. Never mind.
I beg your pardon, sir.
You feel free.
I'll listen to you.
Hundreds of hours of audio recordings have been unearthed of the late, great Marlon Brando. And now they've been brought to life in a documentary. It's good. Yeah, it's good. There's some interesting things here, which include... at some point, older Marlon Brando had like digitized his face.
Wait, what?
At some point, like digital Marlon Brando is kind of talking to you. And I know this sounds weird and bad, but trust me, it looks kind of cool. And
I don't even understand what you mean. What do you mean older Marlon Brando digitized his face?
So at one point he sat in front of, like, you know, if you put all those scanners on your face, like for video games.
Okay.
But it looks cool here, and it looks very much like a Matrix or even a little something that he would have done for Superman kind of thing. Where
so
it's
they
just scanned
in his face, and now, so now his face can die. Like in the Congress, like they did with Robin Wright in the Congress. Like that?
Yes. And it's not used very much at all in the movie, but it's used on occasion. Right. And really it goes through him and in great detail kind of not only the actor he was but the actor he wanted to be and then a little bit about the tragedy with his children later in life as well. I really liked it. And it's one of those things where it's like kind of a no-brainer if you don't feel like you know a tremendous amount about Marlon Brando and you don't necessarily want to read a book because, I mean, come on. Who wants to read a book when you can see a movie? Not only that, it's a documentary that's an hour and a half. Try to read one of them their books in an hour and a half.
Forget about it. Barely get through the cover.
But yeah, little things like him talking about like he'd be a con man if he wasn't an actor and just all these little things of what he did with roles and how he feels like he was influenced by one specific person toward method acting and all this stuff. And his perspective on Apocalypse Now and kind of how he was thrown under the bus at a couple of different times. And I thought it was all very cool and interesting and done in a way that was engaging, considering the bulk of it is, well, we've got these new audio recordings. What do we do with them?
Right.
And they brought it to life really nicely. So yeah, it's an 8 out of 10 for me. I remember, if I believe correctly, it was our friend Dan Mecca.
Yeah.
Who saw it at Sundance and was just like, yep, that's it. That's my favorite film of the festival.
I remember him raving about that.
Yeah, and I could see why. I didn't think it was perfection, but I totally think it's worth your time.
Good. I'm curious about that because I've always liked Marlon Brando. I enjoy those behind-the-scenes stories. Was that the genesis of the film that they found or they got the rights to this audio
footage? Yes, 100%.
And like, okay, 100%. We've got to make this into a movie somehow?
Gotcha. That's how the movie starts. On the screen, it says, like, recently, hundreds of hours of, you know, audio has been found. And so, yeah, there you go.
Nice.
And so you feel like you're getting, you know, a little on the inside.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Excellent. Oh, I didn't say, but I would give Once I Was a Beehive a B+. Sure.
Whatever. Nice. Oh, and I didn't say, but I also didn't realize that Marlon Brando was as socially active as he was. Like I knew things like, you know,
like
what he did during his
stuff.
Yeah. Like with his Oscar speech and stuff like that. Like I knew moments like that, but I liked learning that he was more.
He was more, especially near the end. He was a lot more.
He was a lot more.
Yeah.
Oh, is that where more man, like Mormon? Is that, like when
you
become
more? He was like three times as many men as he had been before.
Yeah. He was more man.
How? This is a tangent.
Oh, go ahead.
I didn't think you were going to stop me. How interesting that here was one of the maybe the best actor of his generation, like maybe actually the best actor of his generation, and then eventually what he was known for was being a huge fat embarrassment.
It's so like how weird.
And how must that have crushed him? I mean, to still be alive and see his star fall and to see his own mistakes and lifestyle choices make him such a turn him into a dump, like how?
Well, and not only
that
kind
far.
Kind of a joke.
Yeah, exactly. To like go from being the top guy to being a joke.
Well, and you wonder if people like Elizabeth Taylor or Marlon Brando saw that side, or if they were just so far removed of it at the end that they just weren't thinking in that direction, or didn't look at it, or they were insulated by their team, or whatever the case may be.
You know, I remember. But,
What?
Something when Brando died, I remember reading a story about him, and I can't remember what the source was, but someone who was with him later in his life, and he saw one of his old
– seems credible. Go. Definitely
saw someone of his old movies come on TV, and this friend who was with him said that he saw himself on the TV and sort of got wistful and said something to the effect of, like, my goodness, I was so beautiful. Like, sort of, like – recognizing that
seeing it for a moment, but not necessarily having that on your head all the time. But it is weird because, I mean, don't you think somebody in our current state is going to follow down a similar path? Like law of averages dictates that Johnny Depp might be 400 pounds one day.
Yeah, of course he's already sort of become an embarrassment.
but in a different way. Yeah,
a different kind of embarrassment.
He's he's a different kind of embarrassment because it's somehow made him more popular and not necessarily more respected in all circles, but some circles would still consider his path.
And, but you're right. Not necessarily that someone will get fat, but that someone will.
No, right.
One of our main idols will fall somehow, fall prey to their own.
Wear a muumuu on a talk show.
Yeah, that'll probably happen.
And feel okay about it at the moment.
What if
isn't that what he used to do with Larry King? He used to show up in a muumuu.
What if it's Chris Pratt? What if Chris Pratt gets super fat again and stops caring and becomes a crazy recluse? We'll be so sad.
At this point, that would mean his family life would have to drastically change, because I think that is, after seeing the documentary, I feel like that's one of the things that like shifted Marlon.
Not having a stable family situation?
Not having a stable family situation. I feel like that had a lot to do with it, and I could see that.
Probably so, yeah.
So, yeah. So you really think Anna Faris is going to do a number on Chris Pratt?
I don't think that she will. I was saying, what if that does happen? But I think you're right. I think that's a stabilizing influence.
I thought you had some inside
info. No, I don't.
Plus, Chris Pratt grew up in the Northwest with a really good family.
Yeah.
And didn't necessarily have the dedicated dreams that Brando did. So I think Chris Pratt will be okay, but I'm glad you're worried about him now, just in case.
I was just thinking of who we love right now.
Okay.
But anyway.
Jesse Eisenberg.
I don't think we love him quite the same way.
Do we not love him yet?
I mean, we like him, fine, but I don't.
All right.
He's not beloved.
Yeah, well, you're right. I maybe, but maybe not
right.
The collective we. That was That was an okay tangent. We'll leave that one in the show.
Thanks.
Yeah.
And then another movie, the last movie that we're catching up on, The Gift. Saw this with my old pal Brett when I was in Utah last week.
Oh, Brett.
Good old Brett.
I did not see this movie, and just like Straight Outta Compton, I'm looking forward to it. I want to see it.
Yeah, The Gift, written and directed by Joel Edgerton, who is an actor. He's also in the movie as kind of the main stalkery kind of guy.
Okay.
Not the main squeeze. And he's
so nobody squeezes him.
There's no squeezing. He is not squeezed at all in the movie, no.
Okay.
And this is first thing he's directed? I think it is. Anyway, he's got brothers, Nash Edgerton and Owen Edgerton, and they're Australian, and they've made a few movies here and there. Anyway, in The Gift, you got Jason Bateman, you got Rebecca Hall. They're a couple just moving into a new house, and Joel Edgerton plays Gordo, who was, it turns out, an old high school acquaintance of Jason Bateman's. And Bateman, his name is Simon, doesn't recognize him at first, and then when he does, he's like, oh, Gordo, wow, I'd totally forgotten about him, that kind of thing. Gordo tries to ingratiate himself into their lives, and he seems nice enough, a little socially weird, but all right. And then some stuff starts happening, and Simon gets a little suspicious. His wife, Robin, is of the, oh, he's harmless kind of thing. And then more stuff happens, and there are revelations and so forth. I think it's a pretty decent quasi-psychological thriller. It's not super scary, a little suspenseful here and there.
Okay.
It's more interesting as this character study and as we learn more about the people. And it makes good use of Jason Bateman. You know how he's always kind of the smarmy.
Yes, it's kind just of a matter of
better
if
than
he's
you.
Turned it up. It's either like he's barely that, or he's turned it up to 10.
Yeah,
like,
and
that's
Jason Bateman's
range.
This is a good non-comedic use of that. A good dramatic use of his natural ability to be maybe kind of a jerk.
And I'm a big fan of Rebecca Hall. Does she hold her own here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's true.
Good.
Yeah, and I think it is not great, but it's a good, solid B-minus of a movie, The Gift. I don't know if you need to rush out and pay full price to see it, but definitely catch it on Redbox or Netflix or whatever later on. Definitely worth seeing, The Gift. There you go.
Okay.
Now it's time for Question of the Week.
The Question of the Week.
We didn't have one before because we went on vacation. Well, me. And you.
I did enjoy it.
And so your assignment for next week, tell them. Lay it on them.
No, you tell them.
No, you tell them.
Oh, because I'll mess up the wording again. Okay. Which, yeah, I already, you said the better wording of it and I liked it. That's why I'm asking you to do it. Because I said something and you're like, oh, you mean this? And I was like, yes, that's what I was trying
to
say. We
want to know the sequel, the second film in a series that was the most improved over the first.
Yes. Most improved sequel from first to second.
Yes. So most in other dramatic words, increase in quality from first to second film.
So Skyfall doesn't count.
Because that wasn't the second
film. That's part of the series. That wasn't like the second 80th. Film. Yeah. So we're going from first to second. What movie had the best leap? The biggest surprise. The one you were like, I don't even want to see this second. Oh my gosh, that's right. Good.
Because maybe the first one was not that great. Or maybe the first one was really good. And then the second one was even better.
Right.
Or, yeah.
And so by that rationale, if you're thinking, oh, I still want to say the best sequel is Empire Strikes Back, you kind of have to say why it was so much better than Star Wars in your answer.
Sure, it was better than Star Wars, but much better?
So much better?
Yeah.
And no, you can't say Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade because that's a number three.
Yeah.
Okay? I can't make this easier.
Yeah. And you can't say John Quincy Adams over John Adams because those weren't movies, they were presidents.
See? Layers.
So stick to the rules
here. A lot
of
layers. And you know, we always like it when you say a little something instead of just saying the title of a movie. Yeah, give us a little something more.
Give us a little bit more. What about it?
We want you to put forth a wee bit of effort.
Explain yourselves.
Just a wee bit.
Just a wee bit. You can always email us.
One wee's worth of efforts.
At moviebspdx@gmail.com. And you can post it on Facebook.
Post it on Facebook. And everything like that will be at moviebs.com.
That's true.
That's where you can go to find that sort of thing.
And we'll discuss those answers next week and have a good long chat about it. Good in-depth conversation.
All right.
Let's plan on that.
All right.
Now it's time for the last and final update on the Summer Box Office Challenge.
This is like the second scene after credits. When you didn't even, you know, it's just like, what? Aren't we already done with this?
We're done, but now it's official. Now the final numbers are in. Final tally. You are the victor.
Oh, yeah.
You, Jeff Bay, are the winner. Your 10 films opening weekends totaled $596,797,300.
Nice.
My 10 films.
Yes.
Opening weekends. Totaled $557,953,131 for a difference of $38,844,169.
Broken down to 10 movies, each movie of mine on average beat you $3.8 million worth.
And this is easily the closest contest we've had, though.
Easily the closest. And I believe we decided that means that's the amount you have to transfer to my account is the $3.8 million.
Actually, no actual money involved here.
Coming again? Why did we do this? What was the point?
We talked about it. There was not going to be any money involved. $3.8
million.
You made that up.
$3.8
million. And what's funny is that if I had chosen Straight Out of Compton, instead of any of my lower grossing ones, I would have won. But I don't think anyone that wasn't on either of our radar at the beginning of the summer for being a big hit.
No, that's we always miss one.
Yeah,
at least that was the one this time.
And
like goodness, Man from U.N.C.L.E. we both shied away from, but like that was a tank.
That did
job.
Okay. Yeah.
No.
That's right. No, it tanked. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I mean, compared to its budget and what they were hoping for, it did not do well. Which is unfortunate because that's an actual movie that I think people should have paid money for. But anyway.
What are you going to do?
What are you going to do, people?
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do?
Fantastic Fest, I'll be wearing tattoos.
So at Fantastic Fest, temporary tattoos all over from the neck down. I will pick 3 events or movies, but of course they will be events because Eric hates events at film festivals, that Eric must attend.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about one thing that we haven't talked about, but we'll do it off air.
Okay.
About the maybe situation. There was a maybe bet that we never vocalized on the show. I remembered it. Don't worry.
Okay.
So I'm going to see if you're in the mood for it.
Probably not. I'm guessing not.
It's dealer's choice.
Am I the dealer in this scenario?
Yes, you are the dealer. Right. And then three nights in a row.
Oh, my gosh.
Of Paul Blart Mall Cop Part 2 with running diary for each night.
With running diarrhea each night. Maybe this will be one of those sequels that's way better than the first one.
Yeah, maybe that's the answer.
Maybe.
Maybe. Maybe.
I need to figure out when I'm going to do this.
You know what's nice? No, you'll have to figure that out. Yeah. You know what's nice? I guess you could do it anytime.
Is it out on DVD yet? I wonder if you should do it yet. I don't know if it's out yet.
I think it is.
Probably.
We'll find out soon. How can we find out? There's, I don't.
No way.
But anyway, we'll have to figure out if it's better to do that before or after Fantastic Fest. Or if that even matters. One thing that's nice that I've learned is I need to tell everybody that I know, including you, the listeners, about the temporary tattoo situation. Mm-hmm. Because people just keep giving me amazing ideas.
What my tattoos should say or be.
Yes. And it's one of those things where it's like, oh my gosh, of course, is my normal reaction to it. So yeah.
Are you going to share any of them? Give us any previews at all?
No.
Okay. Well, I look forward to finding out with everyone else.
How hairy are your arms?
About this hairy. I mean, fairly hairy.
Fairly hairy. I'll have to read up and see if temporary tattoos can, like, stick on that part. Otherwise, I just got to use other parts.
Yeah, yeah.
And your stomach has a – if I remember, gosh, it's been so long.
My stomach has a shirt over it.
Does it have a little bit of hair?
Yeah, there's some hair there too.
And what about your lower back? Is there hair there?
You know, I have not seen my lower back. That's not true. I mean, there's not a lot. You're going to give me a tramp stamp, aren't you?
What's that? Oh, I don't know.
I mean, I assumed that. Of course I'm going to get a tramp stamp. Yeah, that'll be great. Fantastic Fest. Hey, American Ultra.
I think it's good. It falls under that good
category.
Not
bad. It's not bad. I'll say it's not bad. The Man from U.N.C.L.E., you say, is pretty good? Worth seeing?
It's a step below Mission Impossible, but it's a lot of fun on the big screen.
Good. It looks like fun.
Yeah.
Tangerine, I like quite a bit. You didn't.
It's okay.
Once I Was a Beehive, a.k.a. the Girls Camp movie. Good fun stuff. Nice and sweet and funny and tender and stuff. Listen to Me, Marlon, you say is good for fans
totally
of the Marlon Brando and Hollywood history and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And The Gift is worth seeing. Don't like rush out and spend all your money, but see it at some point. A good psychological thriller. And question of the week, tell us the part two that was the most dramatic increase in quality over part one. And we'll talk about that next week. And that'll be great.
Eric, would you like to end the show now?
I would. You know, by the time next week's show happens, I'll be a year older. My birthday's on Wednesday, you know.
Oh, yeah. I'm not going to be going.
Yeah. Well, you weren't invited. And you don't live here.
But you remember your birthday last year?
I do. Yeah. You came to my special party in Utah, I remember.
The fever.
Oh, you were sick even. Yeah.
Sick as a dog.
Yes, I remember. You were a good friend.
I'm just saying, don't forget.
You never let me.
Nope.
So until next week, for MovieBS with Baron Snyder, I am Eric D. Snyder.
I am Jeff Baron.
Thanks for listening, and good day.
I said good day.